Welcome. This is Mark Steiner here with my dear friend and colleague, Michelle.
Hey, Mark.
Good to see you, love.
Good to be here.
Always good to see you, because Michelle is a comedian, actress, 2010-11 OSI fellow, founder of the Gold Diggers Project. He is one of our leading activists in this country as well, around many issues, children and women and more, and social justice. We're about to have a conversation with Alice Randall, who's writer in residence at Vanderbilt University, author of Ada Rules. She wrote an op-ed in the New York Times called Black Women and Fat that has caused a ton of controversy. We pulled out some quotes from people who had things to say on both sides, and we'll start the conversation with Alice and Michelle in just a moment. But first, before we jump into that, and by the way, Alice, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Mark.
Hello,
it's
Alice.
A pleasure. And so before we start, Chuck Brown, who was a
Godfather Go-Go, Mark.
Godfather Go-Go. Was a great human being.
Absolutely.
Was on the show last June.
Oh, wow.
And had a chance to do a long-ranging interview with him and listen to his music. Just a lovely man, a real gentleman, and the godfather of go-go, one of the great funk musicians.
That's right.
In the history.
I feel like busting loose.
He's a yes.
Give me the bridge.
That's it. And he passed away today.
Yes, at 75,
75,
right?
A pneumonia. And just a lovely man. So before we jump into our conversation, as a tribute to Chuck, we're going to play the very top of our interview with him, a little bit of his music, and you hear that, and then maybe a short clip of my conversation with Chuck, just to memorialize the brother who I loved, and he was a dear friend of bass bands, Marcellus Shepard, who has a show just before here, of course, one of the great men on this radio. And he said to Marcellus, wait, hold a second. He said to Marcellus one day, he said, you know, you are a natural voice and a real voice, and the bass man is.
Wow.
And besides being a good human being himself.
Wow.
So we're going to play this tribute to Chuck, and then we'll start a conversation. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're about to have a conversation with Chuck Brown. Chuck Brown's the legendary godfather of go-go from Washington, D.C. He's known for his hits like Bustin' Loose and I Need Some Money. And you'll have a chance to see him perform live here in Baltimore this Saturday at 3 p.m. as part of Roots Fest 2011. It'll be at the Highway to Nowhere, at the intersection of Franklin and Gilmore Street in West Baltimore, as part of Roots Fest 2011. And we sat down to discuss his legacy and a musical career that spans six decades. And what's in store for visitors to the festival this weekend? Chuck started out by telling me how a trip to Lorton Reformatory, a former D.C. prison, jump-started his music career.
In D.C., it's just not fans. They're like family, you know? A lot of them I watch, they grow up, little kids. Some of them 50 years old, 55 years old, come up to me, hey, Chuck. My mom used to beat me sneaking out to see you. And I'm 55 years old, Chuck. I said, yeah. You know how old I am. Yeah, you used to sneak out to see me 45 years ago, 40 years ago, you know what I mean? And a lot of the fans met at my show, got married, fell in love, and got married, had children. Then their children grew up and come to my show. And now they got children. And now their children come to my show. Man, you talking about, look here, I've been on here 49 years, right? You talking about four generations, right?
That's a lot of people. That was just a little brief clip.
That was amazing, Mark. It's so apropos, just so absolutely wonderful how we could capture Chuck Brown in just a few moments with your time with him. Just this time last year, ironically, almost a year to the month. But perfect Mark Steiner thing. This would only be Mark Steiner being able to pull an interview of the great godfather of go-go, Chuck Brown. And I promise you, a long time ago when we were in college, I'll never forget, we thought he was saying, I said, Shylock, busted on one. We never knew he was saying shout it out. So we used to be like, I said Shylock. We didn't know who Shylock was. We thought Shylock was somebody in the band, like how James Brown had Maceo. We thought Shylock was in the band. Just love Chuck Brown. I went to school right here in Maryland, Bowie State University, and I promise you, you could put Chuck Brown on in college. He was probably our grandfather's age at the time. And the whole D.C., Maryland cohort, with Northern Virginia, would jump up at a party as soon as you, and they'd be like, Chuck.
He was amazing.
Absolutely.
Lovely man. And last year, and we're about to turn to Alice Randall here, but last year when we were with him on stage and I emceed that event with him, he was 74 years old.
And sharp.
And could move
sharp
and
move,
sing.
And still smooth,
yes,
and jazzy, Mark.
He was that.
Absolutely.
Clean.
Thank you so much for that tribute. On behalf of all of the D.C., Maryland, DMV community who loved Chuck Brown and all the artists, EU and the Go-Go Bands and Salt and Pepper and Kindred, who have all, you know, a number of artists who have worked with Chuck Brown. Kindred just did a new album a year ago and Chuck Brown was on there. So just thank you, Mark, for sharing that. Oh,
so Chuck, rest in peace, brother.
Rest in peace.
So we're about to have a conversation now with Alice Randall. Sorry, Alice, we took that diversion there for a moment.
I was born in Motown, so I am all about giving props to our great musical men.
All right. Another Detroit person.
Wow. Hello, Alice, we got a Motown lady here.
Yep, born in Detroit City, grew up in Washington, D.C. So.
Wow. What mile are you from, Alice?
So we're going to talk, folks, the lines are open at 410-319-8888. Alice Randall wrote a piece in the New York Times that really did set off quite a discussion in the New York Times and elsewhere. And it was the article was entitled, the opinion piece, Black Women and Fat, and featured an incredible picture of a very curvy
Josephine Baker. Yes.
And so, Alice, let's just talk a bit about what you posited here, because, I mean, the question of obesity is very real in America. We have more obese people, black, white, Latino, Native American, Asian, whoever you are, than any country on the planet Earth. But it seems that when it comes to weight and African American women, that the discussion becomes different.
Well, it may be time for us to have an altogether different discussion, because the issue for me, one of them is everyone in the whole planet is actually more obese now than we've ever been in the history of the planet. I don't even know that Americans are more obese than any other country, but what I do know. No, I am a black woman born in Detroit, Michigan, grew up in Washington, D.C., live down in the Stroke Belt now, and I am just too sad about seeing one out of every four middle-aged black women has diabetes in this country right now. That's one out of every four of my sisters. And four out of every five black women in this country are seriously overweight. And right now, obesity, and people don't know this, I'm talking as a woman who's been way over 225 pounds. I'm talking as one of those ladies, that obesity in this country is overtaking smoking as the number one cause of cancer. So what I want to say from the very beginning is my op-ed and my novel, Ada's Rules, are both love letters to black women and the beauty of that we have when we're large and when we're small, but it's asking us to look at our choices and look at what we're doing and see what we want to do different. Because Ada's number one rule in my book is don't keep doing what you've always been doing. Because whatever we have been doing as individual Americans and as black women, I'm a black woman, that got us to one in every four black women in America having diabetes, who's middle age, and four out of every five black women, period, have being obese, and $174 billion a year being spent on diabetes-related illness. It's time to do something different.
Now, in your article, you start off with somebody who I knew very well, who was a dear friend before she passed away, Lucille Clifton, and her 1987 poem, Homage to My Hips. So I printed it out, and I've asked my friend, co-host here, Michelle, just to read it, because I think it sets up your article, also sets up this conversation. So Michelle's going to read Lucille Clifton's Homage to My Hips.
Homage to My Hips. These hips are big hips. They need space to move around in. They don't fit into little petty places. These hips are free hips. They don't like to be held back. These hips have never been enslaved. They go where they want to go. They do what they want to do. These hips are mighty hips. These hips are magic hips. I have known them to put a spell on a man and spin him like a top.
Lucille.
Thank
Lucille
you, Michelle. Clifton. Thank you, Ms. Lucille Clifton.
Yes.
Amazing.
So talk about why you began that this article with that poem, or putting that poem in there.
Because it says that line, these hips have never been enslaved.
Yes.
And one, that captures the idea, which I say in the article, that the fit slave, the fat black woman, and I have been a fat black woman, is in some ways the opposite of a fit slave. That when we talk about black women and fat, we have to talk about it in a historical context in which our fit bodies have been exploited for other people's uses in the past. And so there are some black women, not all, but some, who see acquiring fat as both an act of political resistance and of political expression. And I have been one of those women. I also wanted to choose that poem because she said they spun a man like a top. They're acknowledging there is sexuality in these hips, that it is not, and I mean the most positive kind of Garden of Eden, Song of Songs sexuality, not some kind of caricature, that we don't have to see our women as skinny and tiny to be beautiful. And I like to point out, people question me about that, and I say, if 4 out of every 5 black women is seriously overweight, if you do not believe large black women are beautiful, then you are saying that less than 20% of black women are potentially beautiful, and I don't think that. So I celebrated this poem by Lucille Clifton. Now, Lucille Clifton, this is a very sophisticated poem with many meanings. But I said I live down here in Tennessee in the Stroke Belt. I was down teaching in Rouleville, Mississippi on Monday. And down here, I've heard women and girls recite that poem. And part of what they mean is, I may be large and I am beautiful too, and I am powerful too, and I am worthy of being desired too. She may mean more things when she wrote the poem. But how many readers, black women, in all over this country have read this poem. It's down to those simple basics.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, just listening to your response and your reasoning and just even, you know, your position on this so far, I have to tell you, this is just such poetic justice on so many levels. We were just having a conversation about this earlier, myself and a gentleman, about the stature of women, you know, particularly of African descent. And I think for me, this whole discussion really goes back to feeling comfortable in your own skin, feeling comfortable in how you show up in the world and being unapologetic about that. And at the same time, Alice, I also see that you're lifting up some very critical information in terms of the health aspects of obesity and the health aspects of you know, going into this too romantically, you know, romanticizing obesity in the black, in the African American and so-called black community. So for a woman who ethnically identifies as an African woman of African descent, I know that I used to hear this thing, she has childbearing hips, you know, that, oh, this one can push some babies out, you know. I had no hips and I had 3 babies. I don't own a pair of hips, you know. And I was wondering, am I going to be stuck, you know, when it's really time to do this whole having baby things? But it's interesting to me how we have found ways to make romantic the things that societies have, that this particular society has demonized. And then have we taken that too far and exploited it and offered an opportunity to let obesity be almost politically correct for us? So it's just finding that fine line, you know, that paradox, but also that fine line that says, yes, I celebrate, you know, homage to my hips, but I don't want to be 1 in 4 diabetics, you know, in my family. I don't want to be that number. So it's trying to find a way to reconcile those two paradigms and give it a safe space.
That's exactly why I wrote the article, for us to have this conversation between the two of us and the 3 of us here and all across the nation so that we can honor those big hips and those old phrases, the bigger the cushion, the better the push.
Woo! Don't go there, Alice. Don't go there.
You, all of that. But at the same time, as I said to my husband, I said, I'm losing 30 pounds or I'm going to divorce you and you better get out of my way when I'm doing it. I have no intention to lose my eyesight for that man.
Or lose a limb, Alice.
I'd be a blind girl to see you walk away from me. But I have every intention of holding onto my eyesight. And I love the way you said comfortable in our own skin, because the subtitle of my novel, Ada's Rules, is a sexy skinny novel.
Wow.
By skinny,
I love
did
it.
Not mean skinny like thin.
Sure.
I meant comfortable in my own skin. And so, that's how Ada defines it. Skinny is when I'm comfortable in my skin. And I want to shout out to any sisters out there who are 300 pounds today, more than that, over 200. Love yourself the way you are today. Love yourself now. I love you. I think you're beautiful. I think I was beautiful when I was 225, but I'm under 200 now, and I can love this new me too. I think that we have to create an environment where it is safe and expressive and political for us to be in the shape that will allow us to live the healthiest, most dynamic, vital lives possible.
So, Alice, can I ask you a question? I hate to cut you off because I just want to ask you this. What has been, if at all, if you could kind of contextualize it, what has been the biggest kickback? What has been the biggest backlash about this article? I mean, I know there's been a myriad of different, you know, responses to it. But what has been the biggest thing that really is pronounced to you?
Well, I would say, you know, for letters that I get personally, it feels like 18 to 1 that they feel recognition, that they say, you're telling a truth that I feel that hasn't been told. I've had some people say, this is sort of inner black group things. You don't talk about this in the general public.
What is that?
And I say, the truth will set me free. And my father told me a long time ago, speak up, girl, you're not down south. Well, I'm down south, and I'm going to speak up anyway.
I like your daddy.
He also told me to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves. The most horrible pushback I've gotten has been people who said, you know, nobody thinks any large black women are beautiful. And that has been, and I said, that poor self-deceiving brainwashed person, that they would believe that. And I've had a small number of academic black women who say, where are your studies that prove this? Where, you know, you're not a sociologist. Who are you to say this? And I say, I am a black woman living in the South who only said, I'm telling my truth. I'm talking about the big thighs I wish for as a girl. I'm talking about my man who's gorgeous, who's a lawyer, who's black, loving me large. I'm talking about my friends. I'm a novelist. I'm talking about the world I see every day. When my daughter goes to teach in Mississippi, and she's a size 4 and 6, and her students tell her, you're too small, Miss Williams. I'm talking about my truth. I know that there are my sisters who are up in New York and Los Angeles, and I want to call out to some of the most beautiful, strong, sleek black women I know. Serena Williams,
right.
Venus Williams, Michelle Obama. These are stunning women.
Right.
I could talk about... there are so many, but that's when 4 out of 5 African-American women are overweight, that's not everybody. And you can't tell me the other 80% aren't beautiful, too. But I want us to look at our health issues. So the pushback is telling community secrets in the general public. Some people who thought I should be more academic, and I did go to Harvard, and I am a professor. I believe in getting to the cut to the true truth.
Why do we have to...
So,
go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to encourage folks to join us here.
410-319-8888.
Michelle is in the house. We're talking with Alice Randall, writer in residence at Vanderbilt, author of the novel Ada Rules. And we're talking about her op-ed she put in the Times last weekend, Black Women and Fat. We'll read some of the comments that folks wrote about that from in the Times. 410-319-8888 and join us here. I mean, one of the things, I have a line in this thing, there's so many things I could pull out, and we could spend just hours talking about a sentence.
Uh-huh.
Like one sentence you wrote in here was, chemically, in its ability to promote disease, black fat may be the same as white fat. Culturally, it is not.
That is loaded.
Well,
Alice, that's loaded.
It's loaded, but let's look at it this way. Our grandmothers. My grandmother was big as 3 houses, and I thought she was the most beautiful, strong woman I know. That changes how I feel about large women.
Right.
In our churches, many of the time, large women run the churches. I talk about that in my novel, Ada's Rules. Also, our overwork. When I say we black women are often working 2 and 3 jobs, and whether it's working as a domestic servant or working as a lawyer. As I say, I go to the links, and I used to before I dropped out, I went to the junior league meetings. If we are in the high ends, we are having to do the white stuff and the black stuff. If we're poor, we're hustling 2 and 3 jobs and taking care of our children and maybe someone else's to help them get through the day. So we don't get enough sleep. That black women are sleep deprived, and that directly relates to obesity. There's scientific evidence of that. And we are not taught to put ourselves first. I know in my own life, I went to Harvard, my husband is a lawyer, But I get 5 hours of sleep every night because I'm working during the day with my students and my writing. I'm cleaning at the night. I could be ironing something for somebody in this family in the middle of the night just to
Girl,
make sure it's all
you ain't
right
saying
in the
nothing
morning.
But the truth, Alice. Oh, my gosh. It's like you've been peeking in my house. And let me just tell you, there is no precedent for doing the opposite. If there is a precedent, it's not being exploited. In other words, people are upset about you. And let me just go back to something you said. Mark, she said a few minutes ago that folks that look like me and her are saying, why are you talking about our stuff in public? Where is the secret? All you got to do is look outside the window. The evidence is that you ain't hiding nothing. You know, we got an issue here up here on this part of the Northeast that I call the butt-gut rule. They breaking the butt-gut rule every day. Your butt and your gut both can't look like they the same size. Somebody got to have some equilibrium. Nobody's tipping over because you got as much gut as you got butt. And you want to say, why you putting a secret out there? You already spoiled the secret. It's no secret. So I'm trying to figure out what is with us and actually sharing the reality of what we see every day on a platform like this.
I think it's pain. You know, there's a lot of pain out there.
Right.
And I think the 8-8-8, walk 8 miles.
Yeah, I like that.
Drink 8 glasses of water each day. Sleep 8 hours each night. We need to be out here singing that from the rooftops everywhere, not fighting with each other, because that's good for every woman. That's not just good for black women. That's good for every woman. It's good for every man. That's good for America. But we particularly, we are a find-a-way or make-a-way people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why no one will scare me away from talking this deep truth if I think it will save one black woman's life.
Absolutely.
Folks, 410-319-8888. Let's just throw some of these ideas out of here and your perspectives here with Michelle. I had an interesting email from Lester Spence. He may be calling in a minute or two, I hope.
What did Lester say? Dr. Spence.
Dr. Spence. Lester wrote something about this. I was trying to find it on his blog, but I'll look for it. I hope he calls in with his thoughts as well.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what Lester said.
410-319-8888. And there were some people who had written, let me see if I can find something here, that was like on the opposite of what you were saying. And I'm trying to, here we go. I know, did you read the pieces that were in response to your article, Alice?
Not I read the ones that people have sent me letters that have emailed to me, and I've gotten hundreds of emails, and so those are the ones that I have read, because I said I was teaching school in Louisville, Mississippi on Monday morning all day, 7 classes, and I'm a novelist writing down here in the South, and I am also living a life with relations to take care of and arranging to go with my mother-in-law to the Link Assembly, living a real woman's life down here and not just monitoring the media. I'm not in office. I'm talking to you literally from my bedroom in my exercise shorts. I jumped off my treadmill with the phone ring.
You go, Alice. You go. I see you clearly, too. That visual is so vivid for me. If that is not my life without the treadmill. But I see you so vividly. And I just want to say on behalf of, I honor you. I honor you for being bodacious and declaring that you're breaking that cycle in your own family. I mean, you shared that in the article that you will be the last, 200 plus pound woman in your family. And
I'll be the last fat black woman in my family. And I'm proud of having been one, because I cannot but be proud of anything that Georgia Minnie Randall was. And no one in this world can ever make me ashamed of my grandmother or make me feel it wasn't a strong thing to be like her. And someone tried to dismissively say, oh, I had a large relative over in Texas once. You don't have a large relative in Texas once. We have 4 out of 5 black women overweight today. And I'm standing with my sisters and standing in an environment of change, a change without shame. And I am proud enough, and this is because of love. I wrote Ada's Rules with 53 rules about how to do everything from massage our own feet to symbolize taking care of ourselves,
wow,
to how to walk those 8 miles, to how to self-medicate with art like music instead of drinking or even food. So Ada's Rules, I wrote that as a love letter to black women and to myself for the spirit of transformation. And I'm not too proud to ask you, as James Brown would say, I ain't too proud to beg for you all to go out there and look at that book. If somebody needs me, email me a request, and I'll send you one if I can, if you can't afford to buy one. Because we need to get into these positive programs, create our own environment to allow for the healthy transformation while respecting our history. Because the other things, when we talk about the fit black slave, the history of abuse, which often lead to obesity, along with the exhaustion, all of these things go into our culture and are also allowing for a different aesthetic. Because when we were told for years and years that to be black was not beautiful, we had to develop defiant aesthetics, beauty aesthetics that belong to us.
Right.
But this one now, to think that only largeness is beautiful, is working against us in some ways. And that's why I wanted to create a romance novel, because it's a novel about a black preacher's wife who has 100 pounds to lose, and she wants to do it to go to her Hampton reunion because she's afraid she wants a new chance at life. But in the course of the novel, it's 53 rules to get your health. But I wanted to make it as a romance novel because I wanted to say, this can be fun. This can be no shame, no blame. Let's just be creative and get our health together.
We're going to take a very brief break and come right back with Alice Randall and Michelle. 410-319-8888. Come to these calls. I'm going to read something that when we come back that Lisa Teeler wrote in response to the article. It was in the New York Times. She wrote this in the New York Times. She was a former aerobics instructor and health club owner, but she's also a board member and director of programs for the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance. Mm. So we'll come back and read that and wrestle with a bit of what she said. Stay with us. Welcome back to our conversation. Before we jump back into it, I have to remind you, and I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com. Or you can jump on our website at steinershow.org and click on their banner, MECU.com. We are here with Alice Randall. We, being Michelle and I, are here. Michelle, comedian, actress, joins us once a month as my co-host, OSI fellow in 2010. Brilliant woman out there fighting the fight for social justice and many other things she's doing, leading the vegan life. We're joined by Alice Randall, who wrote this incredibly powerful piece in the New York Times and op-ed called Black Women and Fat over the weekend. She's the author of Ada Rules and writer-in-residence at Vanderbilt University. 410-319-8888 is the number. Though I want to read this quote. I promise to go to the phones, too. Let's go to the phones first. And Rashid, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
Welcome.
What I want to say, and I want to make a comment, first of all, our women has these problems where other women around the world don't have. Overweight, diabetes. And these type of diseases come from bad, poor diet and no exercise. And they need to look at other women in other parts of the world that don't have this overweight problem, because that's a lot of work for a man to deal with when he come off of work with an overweight wife.
Mm.
That's a lot of work for a man.
That's real, Rashid.
And we have to understand it as women. Not me, but as our women, they don't want to listen to their man when their man tell them, because he's the best fear of her when she's gaining all this weight with these diabetes. Their diet is out of order, they stressed out, and they don't want to accept no advice from no man. And that's a fact.
Mm. All right.
So the sisters need to listen to their man or their close companion to tell them, baby, you're overweight.
Well, I'd like to turn to Alice first. Alice, how would you respond to Rashid?
I think that we've got to, women, this is one of these things that we women got to do for ourselves. I don't think that we can, we want our men to enjoy our bodies, but we have to, what is beautiful is health, and we need to get it for health. And I think that we have to support people in the transformation. I hear you about the example that all men are not attracted to large women. And so I hear that. But every woman has to get her beauty for herself, not because her man wants it or doesn't want it that way, for me.
Now, I want to raise something. Thank you, Rashid, for your call.
Thanks, Rashid.
410-319-8888. Join us here with your thoughts on this very important topic. And one of the things that really, so many things in your short piece struck me, Alice. I just want to raise one I talked to Michelle about during the break. And you talk about Andrea Elizabeth Shaw's book, which I think is a very important book.
Can I just read the name of the title, Mark?
Yes, please do.
Because the title of Ms. Shaw's book is The Embodiment of Disobedience, semicolon, Fat Black Women's Unruly, in italics, Political Bodies.
And that is it's an amazing book. And I'm glad you put that in your work here, because the idea, and let's talk about this, I want you to wrestle this first, Alice, for us, the idea that part of this being heavy in the black woman's world comes out of the oppression of slavery to not be the life powerful body that would be snatched up and used.
And used in two different ways.
Right.
Because, and it's not just slavery, it's the sharecropping South afterwards, the Jim Crow South, where if the woman looked light-skinned and slim with the Western ideal, European ideal of beauty, she might have been far more likely to be exploited, raped, or her husband might likely to be killed trying to defend her. And so we had a lot of push to develop our own separate beauty aesthetics, as well as the issue of, and I think of that as a novelist, and I've written those situations as a novelist, the situation that literally, if you are too fat to go work out in the field, somebody may not be able to exploit you as a field worker. And I even want to say my own father, this comes to me from deep Detroit. My father came from Selma. He hadn't worn a pair of shoes, he claimed, so he was 13, got to Detroit. He's in a basketball team, a state championship basketball team. And when I first threw a basketball and made a basket, he took it away from me. He said, when I went to college, only thing anyone wanted me to do was throw a ball, catch a ball. Mm-hmm. I don't want that for you. I want you to get behind your books, your paper and pencil. And so fitness, when people's labor has been exploited in the fields and then exploited in college and high school sports, fitness is a completely different thing for that child and that family than for someone who's always worked in a professional environment and goes out to play tennis or golf, whose physical labor has never been exploited.
I'm sorry, Michelle.
I think, you know, there's something that you raised about how your dad was like, I don't want you to throw this ball. But I think, you know, we have to be careful with those kinds of messages, you know, to our girls and young women as well, because I've got girls who would prefer to just look a certain way and not be physical in any way. I'm working with girls who are 14 to 19, 20 years of age. You know, these are the critical years of how you show up as a woman. You know, these are the years that really develop how you actually cultivate your day to day. And a lot of them don't take gym. They won't get sweaty. They don't want to, you know, assume, you know, that kind of position. And so they go throughout their teen years never having any experience with exercise in an organic way. They'd rather just be cute and still eat the things they've been eating. And when they start to see their bodies change and shift, it's almost like they're in shock. Like, why am I gaining weight? Like, where is this coming from? But then there's something else we're missing. I don't know if we're missing it. You probably raised it, Alice. The whole notion of PHAT, you know, fat, you know, how men of color, not just African-Americans, but Latino men, you know, you want a woman who's PHAT,
right,
pretty hot and tempting,
right,
you know, fat, you know. And they used to say something so ignorant, fat to death. Now, you look at that little stanza now, that little fragmented sentence. Fat to death is what we are becoming. Fat to the point of death. But back then that was the phrase of choice. Yeah, my girl, she fat to death. You know, oh really? It's like that. Oh yeah, man, she nice with it. Oh really? So it was almost a term of endearment, but now it's flipped on its heels because we literally are fat to death.
You are so right, and that's why I love that you stand for all these goals and being goal, G-O-A-L.
Right. Gold diggers, that's our co-founder.
And I will say that, no, Ada's rules, one of her rules is walk 30 minutes every day. But another is add a second exercise 3 times a week. That's rule 16. And rule 22 is add a Zen exercise like hooping or yoga or water jogging. So I'm all about, and in fact, some of her kids in the novel say, oh, I don't want to sweat my hair. Can't
right.
do that. We have to change our whole.
Oh my
that's
gosh.
Why I'm calling for a food, a body culture revolution in Black America. Literally, I'm calling upon everyone who hears this radio today to start working the rules and start a body culture revolution where we feel comfortable. I don't care. I have now wash and wear hair. I had to change my hairstyle.
You.
That I can just get in the shower and let it wash and wear so that I could be in the treadmill right before this. And sometimes I might. Today I have not even had. I went out. I did not have any makeup on my face because I wanted to jump on the treadmill the moment I got back home, and I didn't want it going into my skin. We have to make those choices. We have to. I'm bringing hula hoops to my book readings. They'll be excited.
Wow.
We need to be walking in our book groups.
Right.
I have visited with some of my students, but we each make our own choices that way. It's not one set of rules.
But too, Alice, don't you also think that sometimes it's the environment where you share this information, whether it's received in a very positive way? I think, you know, for me, I noticed with Mark and I sitting here, there's been times we've had conversations about things that are, you know, extremely different, and we can't get the phones to stop ringing. But the moment you talk about something as sensitive as this whole cat out of the bag syndrome, which is not out of the bag, about Black women and fat, you know, it's literally like I remember women getting upset with me as a kid when I would say, I don't want any more. Well, you ain't even full yet. You know, you how you gonna not eat dessert? Well, I just had a whole plate of baked macaroni and cheese, greens, you know, fried chicken, some sauerkraut. You know, I've had enough to feed a small village in Tanzania. And you're saying to me, I'm not full yet. And I'm telling you, you know, I can't move. You know, it's just like we have this relationship with food that is so absolutely problematic. And then when you start to talk about what food was really meant for, I remember Brother Carlos, who used to own the restaurant Live and Not Diet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Brother Carlos used to say you're supposed to live to eat, not eat to live. And you're supposed to eat to live and not live to eat, rather. We've just become these people who just food has been the one person that didn't oppress us, the one it's become a metaphor for, like, the lover that never says no, you know. And it's a really sad state. It really is.
It's so complicated because sometimes the only thing we might have had was a little bit of sugar water on a handkerchief to console your child when something terrible would happen, but we're not there now, so we have to make new choices and take new pleasures and have respect for the past. But it's scary when you're talking about diabetes and cancer and hypertension, heart attack, stroke. The phones don't ring. Those aren't fun subjects. Everybody
right.
knows it's serious.
Well, right. And it's interesting. Well, let's go to the phones here. People are now calling in. So let's get some of the people.
Yeah, let's see
in.
What they're saying.
410-319-8888.
Let's listen in, Alice.
And let's go to Kalima. You're on the air.
Oh.
Hi, Kalima. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Very
hi,
well.
Kalima.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. I wanted to say that I'm having a problem with this entire conversation. I feel like there are some broad, sweeping generalizations about women and fat that are being made. And I also feel like that we seem to be having this discussion as if being fat and being fit were mutually exclusive, and they are not. And I think if we keep on going this line that being fat and being fit are mutually exclusive, you can't be one without the other, we're going to lose a crucial space for dialogue. Also, we also are missing the structural barriers and challenges that are in place that are hindering people from being able to be in their optimal, healthy self. Sorry, I'm in Baltimore.
That's all right. You're
fine, Kalima.
And I'm having a serious problem with that. The food that people have access to isn't necessarily the healthiest food. The deserts, yes, that's a fun word everyone's using right now, but they are true and they exist.
Mm-hmm.
Issues of inequity in dealing with your doctor
right.
and mm-hmm. being able to talk about issues that are impacting you with your doctor, that's a problem. Teaching people how to be advocates in the health field with mm-hmm. themselves.
I agree with you 100%.
I do as well.
So I think that there really needs to be a shift in this conversation. So let's really focus on the structural things that we can do to make a difference in the lives of fat people who aren't necessarily, who are not necessarily unfit.
Go ahead, Alice, please.
Well, first of all, I completely agree with the caller. It's a very complex issue, which is why I wrote a novel, not just the short op-ed. And in the novel, almost every single point that you've mentioned is discussed. And so I recommend looking at that, but more specifically, I think, and we, when I use that phrase, we are find a way, make a way people, it's parallel to some of the circumstance in education. Schools in America are horrible, particularly for poor children and particularly for children of color. And it goes at all ends. I remember when my child was in school and the teacher said, I'm so surprised Caroline is my best student. And I said, are you so surprised in math because she's black or because she's a girl? And do you think it makes it harder or easier? I couldn't fix all the teachers. But what I could do is embolden Caroline in that difficulty to still get an excellent education. And I'm very proud of the fact that my child did get an 800 on one of the SAT with some very imperfect teachers along the way. And the same thing about food. You can walk around in circles in your own house. You can walk up and down your own steps. Living in a food desert is extremely difficult, but I advocate literally the sweet potato. You can keep them in your house for 3 months at a time. They're extremely inexpensive. I advocate going back and peanut butter as a very inexpensive source of protein. McDonald's is not the cheapest way to eat, and we have our families off, some of them, not all, but eating at McDonald's when it's not the only choice. And we've got to, and that's why I give concrete examples in Ada's Rules of cheap things, of how to even consider eating out of a gas station if you have to, what is the best choice to make there. And so, and the 8 glasses of water. Water is in many cases free if you get it from the tap, or there are certain places in the community from the public library where you can get it. So we've got to be going and doing that. Now, I understand, and it's true, that our doctors, in 4 of my novels, I've had doctor's appointments. I have been that black lady when the doctor told me that my baby, I was going to lose my baby, and I burst out crying. He said, I'm so surprised. Usually when I see women like you, they want to lose their babies. I was in that conversation. Ooh. The doctor actually said that to me. Mm. I said, women like me? I said, what do you mean? I said, I am 28 years old. As it so happened, I'm married, and I've been married 2 years. And I said, I'm going to find a doctor who will help me have this baby. I'm going to get you fired, and I'm going to go get to have this baby. Yeah. But I'm in the South. I've had more doctors say more strange things to me. I have nurses who... But that doesn't mean I don't have to go after my health. We have lots of obstacles, and that is exactly why we can't fix America tomorrow. We can't wait for America to be fixed for us to get healthy. Now, when I say I agree you can be fit and fat, depending on your definitions, I simply ask most women to consider getting under 200 pounds. That is still, by many definitions for most women, 198. quote-unquote fat. It's a higher BMI than is typical. I think we need to look at the cholesterol and the glycemic index, not about specific numbers. But I also think that there is a role for a conversation that involves everyone's personal experience.
Right.
These are not gross generalizations. They are witnessed from personal experience. And some of them are hard numbers, like the 4 out of 5 African-American women being overweight. But I love that you are providing leadership and direction, and we all have to come in, because I think the best role model we have is Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous was formed by just drunks who worked together and helped themselves get sober one day at a time.
Okay.
And I think based on their real experience of what it was like to be in that problem. And in the community, we have a lot of experience of what our challenges are. And I want to know what you, next time I go to the doctor and I have a doctor not listening to me, I would love to know what you have done, if you've done something to help that doctor listen better. We need to share our strategies.
Go ahead, Michelle.
I think that you really responded to that in a very, you know, wholehearted way. But I also hope that the caller will recognize that we've lifted up a number of points, but there have been points that we haven't had an opportunity to lift up either. And one of those is that we were going to discuss that having a certain body weight does not determine that you're healthy and or unhealthy.
Right.
And we were going to go right to that point.
Well, there's a couple of things. In the New York Times, there's a page of people responding both pro and con to the piece that you wrote. I'll try to get to a couple of them here, at least one of them. Lisa Teeler, who is a former aerobics instructor, health club owner, and board member and director of programs for a group called the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance. And she writes in, why is it that Americans use stereotypes to determine health? We automatically assume that every fat person is unhealthy and that every thin person is healthy. We are simply judging people by their appearance, not health, without seeing them as individuals. This stereotype is no different from assuming that every African-American is a criminal, even though there is a disproportionately high number of African-Americans in the penal system. My philosophy, and one shared by other activists and supported by scientists, is that we need to uncouple weight and health. Mm-hmm. There's an underlying premise of a growing paradigm shift called health at every size.
Right. Sure. And that was speaking exactly to one of Kalima's points about weight and health.
But I am not, I will be upfront that I think that that has to be looked at very carefully. And I love the word fat because it can be so close to fit. But in fact, these new correlations between obesity and cancer are, and that these things are still being examined. And I am not saying, because for example, I talk about anorexia. Being underweight is not healthy.
Right.
And in fact, people who are slightly overweight, some many studies show that they actually live much longer than people who are exactly on what is supposedly an ideal weight. But there are, in fact, and for many women, given average weights, that a lot of what I'm advocating is just getting under 200 pounds. Most women, if you're 5'2", I'm 5'2", 5'3", if you are 198 pounds, you can still be fat and fit. So I am clearly advocating and celebrating that. But at 225, it is very hard not to have complications if you're 5'2". There are limits to what weight you can weigh and typically, and these are just typically, be healthy. And any weight, whatever is your healthy weight, is your appropriate weight. That's why I like to look at glycemic index and cholesterol, not about size. When I say fat, I mean too large for you.
Wow.
Let us try to get another caller or two in here before the end of the hour, if we can. 410-319-8888, as Michelle and I talk with Alice Randall and Renee in Glen Burnie, you're on the air. Hi, Renee, you're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, welcome.
Hi. I'll hear you guys talking about women being overweight a lot of times, and which is somewhat true, but the African-American men, they are just as overweight as the women are. I mean, their bellies is so big that it's causing them to have prostate cancer. Mm. So, I mean, although we talk about weight for women, and yes, some of us do need to lose a little weight, but so do these African-American men because they are really too big for their size, too, some of them.
I think that...
I can't speak to the
number.
It's a strong point. I mean, if we go by just what I would call the non-clinical sightings of that, I would agree. I mean, you can look out the window, but I think for Ms. Randall's sake, we were speaking more to the work that she's dedicated herself to and her own, you know, I love how she's made it a novel, how she uses her own personal experience. She keeps referring to the fact that she was that woman. She was that 200 plus pounder, and she comes from a space of experience and not that of pointing a finger. And so I think that's a rich aspect to consider when we talk about what we're talking about today. I don't want us to get lost in that because I believe it's coming from her space and it's coming from her experience, and we should honor that. Even if we don't agree with all the points being made, we should honor the fact that this is a woman who's lived this experience. And you can hear her say on the other side of that, I've made a choice personally to be the last 200 plus fat woman in my own family. And she's not demonizing those who are 200 pounds and more and are healthy. I don't hear you saying that at all, Alice.
No, and for me, I was on blood pressure medicine, so I had not developed diabetes, but I had hypertension, or borderline hypertension, and I did not want to go to the other place. It was borderline. And so I did not, it is not on the, but what I do think is great is that we should have this, we're having this conversation, and that in terms of writing about men, too, men have issues, but women are the so much the heart and soul of a community. And I've written my whole life as a novelist is focused on mothers and daughters in the African-American experience. And I think that, so I know that men have issues too with this, but I am really concerned with solving it for the mothers because that often solves it for the children, boys and girls. And so that's where I feel that going, supporting mamas. And in fact, women are having higher diabetes rates, although when men get diabetes in the African-American community, often some studies show they get sicker. But it is a slightly larger problem, it seems. But it's a problem for everyone. And part of it is know, I know in a lot of our houses, my husband gets to bed before me. You know, I make sure he gets to get his sleep. But, you know, the mother, you know, woman's work is never done. There's some reality to that in many families. And it shouldn't be that way. I'm not advocating that. And that is why I think when we read, if you get a chance to look at the book, one, we make it joyful and fun. And there needs to be some fun in this, because even adults learning to jump rope again and hula hoop and do the things we did when we were kids and we moved all the time, and that these things also uplift our spirits, that this is part of the way of finding a way forward. But I say to any woman, whatever size you want to be, I support you and I respect you today, right now. I'm only talking about a change I wanted to make.
Alice Randall has been with us. It's been wonderful to have you on the air with us for an hour.
Time.
I really appreciate you taking the time and doing this with us today. Alice Randall, writer in residence at Vanderbilt University, author of Ada's Rules, and who wrote the op-ed Black Women and Fat. We'll connect to all that at steinershow.org, to both pages' response and her work and how you can find her book. And thank you so much, Alice.
Thank you,
and
Alice.
And the website, we've got an army, www.adasarmy.com. So you can join in with for free and for fun and find lots of tips on how to start your own food cultural revolution. Thank you for letting me be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. And Michelle, my dear, thank you so much for coming.
Always
today.
A pleasure.
Wonderful.
Michelle is brilliant and beautiful.
Yes, oh, she is. Bye.
Thank you so much, Alice. I hope to see you real soon.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. On our way out of here, I have to say a couple of things before we jump out. This Saturday night, May 19th at 6 p.m. at the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church on 430 East Belvedere Avenue, where I'm going now for my board meeting for the Center for Emerging Media, is Obama's Foreign Policy in Africa, a special fundraiser that's taking place with leaders of a beautiful struggle. So it should be really very good. You should check that
out.
And I also want to make a congratulations here to Cynthia Holden of Nottingham, Maryland. She's our grand prize winner for a trip for two to the Curaçao North Sea Jazz Festival, August 31st to September 1st, 2012, courtesy of the Curaçao Tourist Board, Princess Beach Resort and Casino, and Public Radio WEAA 89.FM, the voice of the community.
Congratulations. And Mark, I just have to say that I will be at Johns Hopkins on Friday for the huge event with Dr. Brian Gibbs. They're bringing over 800 students from Baltimore City. We'll be talking about career choices and robotics, and Mario Armstrong will be with me as well. And Saturday, I'll be at Douglas Memorial with Pastor Todd Yeary and the women of Douglas Memorial Church, so I'm very excited.
So don't miss Michelle at both of those events. And reminding you, as we go out of here, the Mark Steiner, not going ahead, we have another hour coming. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Department of Housing and Community Development. If you're a first or second time home buyer, you can find a house in Baltimore, 1-800-638-7781. The great Van Jones, former advisor to President Barack Obama, joins us in the next hour, and we'll also have a tribute at the end of that hour to Studs Terkel. Stay with us.